This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Amendments, ratifications, Congress, the Constitution. Important stuff, but maybe not the most obvious place to look for songwriting inspiration. On her new album, All My Friends, Aoife O'Donovan has found the trick to writing engaging music about politics and history. That trick is make it personal. In 2019, Aoife was commissioned to write music to celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, the one that gave women the right to vote. It was a request that seemed a little overwhelming at first. Coming up, Aoife talks about her decision to focus on a suffragist named Carrie Chapman Catt and how imagining the world through Catt's eyes helped her find a personal connection to history. Aoife also talks about how reaching back to the past has influenced the way she thinks about the future and her own daughter's life. Our conversation starts in just a moment, but first, here's a bit of the title track to Aoife O'Donovan's All My Friends.
I always knew, and so did you, that we were going to war. Now years have passed, I'm trying to remember who it's for. If we reach 36, oh,
on World Cafe, Aoife O'Donovan with some of the title track of her new album, All My Friends. I'm Raina Duris. Aoife O'Donovan is here with me today. Welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank you so much, Raina. It's great to be here.
So happy to have you. First of all, could you set the scene for us and tell us about the moment in time that you're capturing in that song that begins the album?
I was trying to capture the mood and the energy of this sort of imagined pre-dawn march into Tennessee to secure the votes needed to ratify the 19th Amendment. They needed 36 states. Tennessee was the holdout. They thought they could get the votes in Tennessee. They did. They met in Tennessee. They marched, and it worked. And I was really trying to capture that experience of coming together. I kind of, from my own perspective, I was like, it's almost like being at a music festival. You stay up all night. You all believe in this one thing together. And I don't know, it's sort of like a folk song version of that mood.
Oh, I love that comparison to a music festival where you're all staying up together, the excitement. Well, I guess we should kind of give an overview of why you were writing about this topic to begin with, because this story, this album started quite a while ago. You were commissioned by the Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra to work on music back in 2019 for the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which is the amendment that granted women the right to vote. That is a big, rich historical topic. What was your initial reaction when you were asked to do that?
My initial reaction was like, why me? How in the world am I possibly going to write anything it was daunting, honestly. It was daunting on multiple levels. First of all, I had never written an orchestral piece before. I had made an album a couple of years ago, an EP that was a string quartet piece, and I'm married to a conductor. And, you know, I have dipped my toes in sort of the pseudo-classical waters, if you will. But the idea that I would write, you know, 20, as they say, like 20 to 25 minutes of music. And, you know, it's like, it's very specific. What an orchestra. Yeah, it's a lot. It's what people are looking for. But I guess I rose to it. I tried to get out of it.
Did you really?
After I said yes, you know, COVID hit, and my husband, I remember saying to him right after COVID hit, being home and being like, I have nothing. I have a 2-year-old. I have a sourdough starter. I have no creative energy whatsoever. I'm not doing this. And he's like, well, you know, you are going to do it. You said you would do it. You're doing it. And I'm really glad that he kind of held me to that, because it would have been really easy to sort of back out. I mean, people back out of stuff all the time. People still back out of stuff all the time. But I'm glad that I didn't. I'm really glad that I stuck with it. tried to figure out what I was going to write about, ended up focusing on Carrie Chapman Catt, who was the president of the National Woman Suffrage Association and who was a great orator of her time. She gave amazing speeches. She wrote beautiful letters. She wrote prose. She corresponded with President Woodrow Wilson. Her words just really spoke to me. They felt so modern in a way, which was sort of shocking to me. As you know, a lot of the stuff you read from 100 years ago doesn't feel modern. It feels very antiquated. And that was not the case with her ideas.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, when you looked at those letters and those documents from, you know, over a century ago, and then you're putting them into your context from today, and you're kind of filtering it through your own experience as a woman, like, what jumped out at you?
There are a couple of lines that are actually on the record. One song in particular, America Come, which is the seventh song on the album, where most of the text in that song really is hers, like they're her words. And there are just these lines where she says, I think I paraphrased this idea, but there are all these people who are in power, all these politicians who are in power. You know, what are you going to do? She's addressing these older politicians and she's saying, are they going to blame you for not stepping aside, for not keeping pace with these new ideas? You know, the future generations will look back and say, you didn't keep pace with these new ideas. And I feel like things like that just really felt so resonant in today's world.
I'm going to play a short clip of America Come so we can hear some of those lines that were inspired directly by Carrie Chapman Catt.
What is the democracy for which the world is battling, for which we offer up? A man power, woman power, money power, our own. The world does not wait for such as these. No one does live in any pause to heed the complaints of man. Have a special interest to serve, nor a selfish reason for depriving other people of freedom.
So that's a bit of America Come from Eva O'Donovan's new album, All My Friends, on World Cafe. The next song we're going to hear from the album is called Someone to Follow, and it sounds like you're speaking directly to Carrie Chapman Catt in this song. As a songwriter, what was it like trying to inhabit the world and the life of a historical figure?
It's funny, this song, Someone to Follow, you're right. I did imagine that I was singing directly to her, but as her mother. I started writing this song sort of trying to imagine, like, what was her mother like? You know, and I think about this a lot. You know, you sort of say, behind every great man was a woman. You know, that old sort of silly, archaic quote. Yeah. Now it feels so ridiculous, but behind every great woman was their mother. You know, I feel like that's so fascinating to me to think about. How important it is to be supported by your parents, obviously not just your mother. For me, that was a huge part, I think, of why I am the person I am today, because my parents were so incredible at giving me confidence and giving me access to all of these things and really continuing. I mean, even to this day, just believing in me and supporting me. And I feel that I wonder about these women who were very ahead of their time and whose ideas may have been considered controversial. Did they always have the support of their parents, or were they estranged from them? Were they going against the grain? What was that relationship like?
Yeah.
You know, and I think we see there's a lot of instances of this being played out maybe in like the from the 50s on. I feel like it's a very common theme in cinema or in books where, you know, the rebellious daughter. But I don't really know of any stories that I can take at face value from the 1800s, you know, dealing with these issues. And it just was fascinating to me. And if they're out there, somebody please send them to me. If there's like a great novel or great work of some sort of art or cinema about the women who are giving birth in the 1860s and how they actually felt deep in their heart about women's issues, I would just love to, I'd love to know about it.
When you listen to this song, you will hear Eva mention that the baby was born with every planet in Capricorn. I did look it up. Carrie Chapman Catt's birthday, January 9th. So she is a Capricorn. Fun detail to throw into the lyrics there.
Thank you for noticing that. Yeah, and it's funny because at that point in the song, I almost feel like my perspective is like subtly shifting. It's still her, but it's like I'm also imagining my own daughter who's a Scorpio, like her mother. And I didn't want to get too confusing there. So I said Capricorn. I said, yes, let's keep it. Let's keep it historically accurate.
We're going to listen to Someone to Follow, then we'll come back, we'll talk some more. This is Eva O'Donovan on World Cafe. Banjo in that song. It's from her album All My Friends, Aoife O'Donovan, Someone to Follow. I talked a bit about being a mother beforehand. We'll come back to motherhood and daughters in a bit, but I do want to talk about the sound of the album and making the album. You co-produced it with your husband, Eric Jacobson, who directs the Orlando Philharmonic, also conducts the Chamber Orchestra, The Knights, who we hear on the record. And you have played together before, but you've never worked on a major project together like this one. And I am always interested in the dynamic when two people who are in a romantic relationship together work on a creative project together. How did you navigate that?
It's funny. Well, I was also co-produced by Darren Schneider. I just want to give him a little shout out, the engineer. It was really like the three of us worked, I think, really well together on this. So it is nice having like one other person as people in couples will know. Like, exactly. But there really was not any friction creatively on this project. Eric was, he was one of the commissioners. He was one of the people who, his orchestra, the Orlando Phil, asked me to do it in the first place. And he's been such a champion of my music and my work, and been such a supportive listener and also a supportive father when I've gone on tour. And, you know, just, it's a lot to juggle. I think a lot of people are married to musicians. Musicians are married to musicians and they tour together, or they figure it out, or one person is sort of like home more, but it's tough because we both have a lot going on. So it was actually really fun to get to be working on this record over the last couple of years, and having him be able to go into the studio in New York when the Westerlies, this great brass quartet, when they did their brass parts, like Eric went into the studio and produced that with them. And, you know, he was doing all the string parts of the Knights. He organized the woodwind session we did here in Orlando, but he also was listening so acutely to the songs as I was writing them and was really a part of the whole process. So it's really special.
Well, like you mentioned at the beginning, he encouraged you to do it even when you felt like, oh, maybe I can't or I don't want to. And you were a little overwhelmed by the whole idea of the project. It, like you just said, there's a lot of people on the album. There's the Knights, there's the Horn Quartet, the Westerlies, there's the San Francisco Girls Chorus, who I really want to talk about for a minute. It's a choir of teenage girls, and we'll hear them on the next song I'm going to play called Daughters. What can you tell us about working with them?
So the SF Girls Chorus is conducted by a woman named Valerie St. Agata, who is a truly deep musician and friend. I had reached out to her several years ago. There was another project that I wanted to do with them. I love the sound of Girls Chorus. I always have. I grew up singing in choirs. Some of my most incredible musical memories and really formative musical experiences came from singing in my high school chorus called Family Singers. We toured Ireland when I was 17 years old. As I've become an adult and made music, I've always kind of wanted to put that choral energy into something, but it's hard to do it without making it sound like weird. You know what I mean? So for this project, I thought like, oh, when I record this, I'll just get like my buddies to sing harmony or whatever. It'll be like a normal kind of harmony vocal type. But as we were sort of finishing the bigger picture of the record, like the more big orchestral soundscapes and adding the brass, I was like, oh, this needs those voices. This music needs the sound of younger girls singing with me.
Why younger girls? Because I think that's a really interesting one, especially in the context of the song we're about to hear.
Yeah, I think, well, it's not all of it. I think that there's just something about like the energy of the innocence and of the hope that that sound gives the listener and gives me as the performer and lead singer. it's like, it's, I don't even really know how to put it into words, but when I've been on stage, we've gotten to do it live with chorus twice. We did it with Brooklyn Youth Chorus in Massachusetts, and they were unbelievable. And I did it with a group in Glasgow as part of a festival in January. And when you first hear, like even in the rehearsal, when I'm singing the song, playing the guitar, and you know, like I'm used to the sound of my own voice. I don't think it sounds particularly like old or matronly or anything, but when you hear then teenagers start singing, you're struck with their youth and their innocence. And even if they're the you know, la creme de la creme, like the best of the best, beautiful tone, they're so such great musicians, they still have this raw, I don't know, like unharnessed energy. And it's so sad. It's so sad and so beautiful. But I feel like because it gives me the sense of hope, people have asked me in talking about this record, like, well, it's, you know, because the record kind of ends on a pretty dark note. Like, well, what's giving you hope? What's giving you hope? And I just like, my only answer is the children, like my child, and the fact that there's this girls' chorus that's willing to sing with me on this. And there are children all around the world who are like they are the future, you know?
Yeah. I think you make a really interesting point, though, in this song when you sing, "We can't leave the fight to the daughters of our daughters." And having you all singing it together does feel very powerful.
And I love this that part specifically. Like, you know, I'm singing that line and they're singing. It's almost like a canon. It's like, I say daughters and they say daughters and I say daughters again. And it's like daughters, daughters, daughters. And yeah, I don't think that would hit the same if it were just, you know, another 40-something. No offense to me, but it's not quite the same.
On World Cafe, Aoife O'Donovan with Daughters from her new album, All My Friends.
They are those who were willing to fill the fight. Their sisters cross the land and declare them quick to cry, saying don't trust them. And watch the country as it bleeds. The enemy of a cause strikes up us. The world is war. You can't leave the fight to your daughters. Daughters, shout to the fray. Shoulders bent, feel the fire.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras, joined by Aoife O'Donovan today, talking about her new album, All My Friends. That song you just heard is from the album. That song was called Daughters. Aoife, you became a mother to a daughter named Ivy Jo about 6 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm, like six and a half almost, yeah.
And becoming a parent, it changes your priorities. It changes your perspectives. How has becoming a mother, and specifically a mother to a daughter, changed how you view the world?
The thing people say most frequently is that parenthood makes you very aware of your own mortality, right? And how you don't want to leave your daughter without you. But I think it's also that I don't want to leave her, you know, you want to make sure that A, the world is here and that we're taking care of not just the planet and, you know, the things that are, I think, are more like kind of talking points, but taking care of each other and of the community and really being aware of your immediate surroundings. And that's, I think, where my perspective has changed the most, being really aware of how my immediate world affects her. And I think that ties so into this project for me because it's all about voting and having the right to vote. And really, I think growing up, I always thought like voting, you know, every 4 years there's an election and then there's the midterms, but really kind of not paying too much attention to this sort of smaller local races and yeah, all of the tiny elections that actually end up affecting your immediate life much more, or not much more, but equally.
Aoife, would you ever run for office?
I would not. I'd never say never. I don't think so. But you know, you never say never. Would you vote for me?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm not allowed to vote. I'm a Canadian citizen. But if I were American, then sure.
I make a great green smoothie. That's all I can say.
I'm speaking with Aoife O'Donovan on World Cafe. You said earlier, there are heavy topics on this album and the feeling that women have a long way to go and how you hold on to hope by looking towards the future and the girls growing up now. How does a figure from the past like Carrie Chapman Catt, continue to inspire you now?
I think the fact that women have always sort of risen to the challenge, and as far back as, I mean, gosh, I mean, like to the beginning of time, right? Like it's like women have always been there, life-giving human beings, and had to overcome so much. And I think that I talk about that a lot with my daughter. We read a lot of old books. We've been reading, we just started reading Beezus and Ramona. I was reading that, the first two chapters of that book, you know, they go to the library and it's, this book is written in the 50s, which I didn't realize. I thought that Beezus and Ramona was like an 80s book, I think, because I associate it with my own childhood.
Right.
Literally was written in 1955. There's a scene where they go to the library and Ramona wants to get a library card and she can't write her name. She's only 4 years old. And the librarian asks her, "Well, honey, what is your father's profession?" And my daughter is like, "Why is she asking that?" And I was like, "Oh, I guess she wants to clarify." And she's like, "Well, why not asking what her mother's job is?" You know, just things like that where it becomes so obvious. So I think that somebody like Carrie Chapman Catt, to sort of circle back to your question, people like that inspire me because they had a higher hill to climb, I think, than I do, certainly. Sort of taking, I think I and many others in my generation can take for granted that, yeah, we do have bank accounts and we do have jobs and there are so many working mothers and there are so many women who are, you know, not enough in positions of power, especially not at the federal government level. I think that's something that I really hope changes in my daughter's lifetime. But there are a lot of exciting women out there doing a lot of hard work.
Yeah. And acknowledging that there's a ways to go doesn't mean giving up. It just means that you know what you need to kind of overcome.
Exactly.
We're going to hear a bit of Over the Finish Line. And I just want to note to people listening, you might notice a familiar voice in here. Anais Mitchell sings harmonies with you, Aoife. This is Over the Finish Line. Aoife O'Donovan on World Cafe.
I became a mother trying to figure it out. Everything fills me with dread. What do we leave her? What's sticking in my mouth? I hear your voice in my head. What is this democracy, Carrie? I feel that we made our bed.
From her new album, All My Friends, that was Aoife O'Donovan with backing harmonies from Anais Mitchell, Over the Finish Line on World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris, joined by Aoife O'Donovan today. That song is the second last song on the album. The album ends with a cover, and I think it's a really interesting and a really powerful choice. It's one of my favorite Bob Dylan songs, and it's one of my favorites because his storytelling in this song is so devastating. It's The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. Could you talk about why you chose this song?
I chose the song to finish the record in part because I felt that the sort of social commentary that Bob Dylan provides had a place on this album of all, you know, all of my original music. It was, I think, maybe an unusual choice because it's obviously dealing with a very different part, a time in history. You know, it's many years, 43 years after the passage of the 19th Amendment, but at a time during the Civil Rights Movement where there was a lot of unrest and there were a lot of horrible things happening and consequences were not what they should have been. And I think that his approach, his sort of, I mean, historical, fictionalized way to make a folk song out of a very dark event was inspired a lot of the sort of the approach that I took to my songs. But I can't take complete credit for picking the song. The person who actually chose the song initially for me was my friend Gabriel Kahane, who arranged the song for orchestra. He first arranged it, and we premiered this arrangement with the National Symphony Orchestra on the lawn of the Capitol in 2017. So I had this gig with the NSO, and it was on the lawn of the Capitol, and I was very pregnant with my daughter, and it was 2017, and it was sort of like the beginning of, you know, a new time, I think, for Americans, for many Americans. And he said, I really want to arrange this song for you. Like, what do you think? And I said, I love that song. I think that would be an amazing, really incredible thing to do. And I just love the arrangement so much. And we kind of fussed with it a little bit and put it on the record.
Yeah. I mean, the arrangement is stunning. Like the moments where it's just your voice all alone are like, they give you chills. And it does feel like this song has a common link with your writing on this album. I mean, even though it talks about, it tells a very sad and frustrating and infuriating story, there's, like, a bite to this song. Like, in the line, like, "And you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, take the rag away from your face, now ain't the time for your tears." It's like, that is, it's not like, oh, we're giving up, it's too hard. It's like, right. This is... there's a bite there.
Exactly. But then it ends with, "Now is the time for your tears." And I think that that's also like a, that's the last thing you hear on the record. And it's, I think for me, I sort of think of that as like, okay, you can take a moment and you can grieve and mourn all of these injustices, but tomorrow is a new day and we have to sort of continue to, yeah. I mean, I feel like I keep on saying like, make the world a better place, make the world a better place. And I don't mean to be Pollyanna-ish or glib in any way. I just sort of want, I want to maintain the idea that like it is possible and it is within our reach, because otherwise, like, what really, what's the point?
It might seem like, oh, what a simple idea. I want to make the world a better place. But without that urge and that desire, I mean, it doesn't become a better place.
It doesn't. And I think even for me, I mean, I feel like throughout this whole sort of making this record and putting it out and talking about it so much, I'm sort of thinking like, okay, what am I doing? And I'm not an activist, you know, I'm not out there marching every day and banging on doors. And you know, I feel like I do my part and I really try to do more and more always. But I think it's important to acknowledge that whatever it is that you can do, even if it's small, is important. And I think that music and art, even just music and art for the sake of music and art, and it can be completely non-political, but sometimes you do need these moments of beauty in your life that I know I do. I know I want to go see concerts and I want to hear music and I want to be moved by books and by films and by, you know, paintings. And I think that we have to just be able to find that any way we can.
Here's one of those moments of moving beauty. To finish, Aoife O'Donovan with her version of Bob Dylan's The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll.
In the courtroom of honor, the judge pounded his gavel to show that all is equal and that the courts are on the level, and that the strings on the boots ain't pulled and persuaded, and that even the moves get properly handled once that the cops have chased after. Just happened to be feeling that way without a warning, and he spoke through his cloak, most deep and distinguished, and handed out strongly for penalty and repentance Williams and Zinger with a 6-month sentence. You who philosophize disgrace, criticize all fears, bury the rag deep in your face, for now is the time for your tears.
The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, Aoife O'Donovan with her interpretation of that song, originally by Bob Dylan. It closes out her new album, All My Friends, and it's closing out this interview today. Aoife, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Raina. You're such a great interviewer, and I love chatting with you.
Oh, well, you're an amazing performer and songwriter, and I'm just so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm Raina Duris, back in a moment with more World Cafe.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch. Support for this podcast and the following message come from the NPR Wine Club. NPR Wine Club members have contributed over $1.5 million to helping create a more informed public. B21. Join the charge at nprwineclub.org/podcast.